Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 467 for February 23rd, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
Just to have a room of 90 women, you don't see that very often in the whiskey industry. I mean, I certainly get a fairly high proportion of women coming along to my tastings, but to have 90 women all there talking about some fantastic whiskeys was one of the most memorable experiences, certainly, of my whiskey kind of career.
Alwyn Gwilt grew up in British Columbia, then moved to London, and is now known as Miss Whiskey, building a career out of her passion for whiskey. More with Alwyn Gwilt later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my tasting notes for a rarity, a North American peated single malt. All on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. What a difference a week makes. Last week, Diageo's Ewan Morgan gave us this answer to my question about the future of the Stitzel-Weller Distillery in Louisville.
What I can tell you about Stitzel-Weller is that currently it is being used as the bullet brand home. The stills are still there. The still house is actually in a pretty poor state of repair. But currently there is no news to share on Stitzel-Weller.
Now, to be fair, I asked him about whether the distillery itself would be reopened, but this week Diageo announced plans to invest at least $2 million to open up Stitzel-Weller to the public for the first time, with a new visitors center and gift shop dedicated to bullet bourbon and the new orphan barrel whiskies. Back in 2011, the Bullet Experience opened in the distillery's old office building, and Tom Bullet told us back in episode 345 that while it was going to be used then as a training center, the eventual plan was to open it to the public and make Stitzel-Weller a stop on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. The new visitors center will encompass the Bullet Experience, but a new welcome center will be added since there's only a guard shack at the entrance right now. Diageo declined to make executives available for interviews in time for this week's episode. The company's Alex Dunn told me that corporate approval for the project had just been received, and the final plans are still being worked out. The first phase may be completed in time for the Kentucky Derby weekend in May, with the rest of the project to be done later this year. As for reopening the distillery itself, Dunn told me there's still no news on that front yet. The Isle of Skye is getting a second distillery. Construction begins this summer on the Torahay Distillery on Skye's southeast coast. It's being built by Mossburn Distillers. CEO Neil Matheson selected a site that was once earmarked for a distillery by the late Sir Ian Noble, who had wanted to build up the island's economy for years. The distillery will be built on a farm on the Sleat Peninsula. Sad news coming out of Sweden. We'll be getting more details on this in the coming days, but McMurra Distillery has laid off about a third of its employees because of sagging export sales. Managing Director Magnus Dandenell told a Swedish newspaper that McMurra will refocus on sales in Sweden and northern Germany. The move likely means McMurra will be pulling out of North America and its other European export markets. You'll be able to get updates on this at whiskeycast.com as more details are available. In other news, Beam shareholders will vote March 25th on the $16 billion offer from Suntory. Both companies expect to close the sale in April, assuming they get approval from U.S. and European regulators. Meanwhile, a federal judge in New York has rejected Beam's attempt to dismiss a $100 million lawsuit by the owner of Michael Collins Irish Whiskey. Sidney Frank Importing Company claims Beam broke the contract that it had with Cooley to supply bulk whiskey for Michael Collins and told wholesalers that the brand would be going away. Beam inherited the deal with Sidney Frank when it bought Cooley at the end of 2011 and started cutting off bulk whiskey sales to bottlers without long-term contracts in place. The key question is whether there was an actual contract in place. Sidney Frank says yes, Beam says no, and has said it will keep fighting the lawsuit. Now, Beam bought Cooley from a group of investors led by the Teeling family. Jack Teeling struck out on his own after the sale and founded the Teeling Whiskey Company in Dublin. As we reported a few weeks ago, Teeling Whiskey has received permits to build Dublin's first distillery in nearly 40 years. Jack can't comment on the Michael Collins case, but did confirm at a media tasting in New York Friday that Teeling Whiskey has its own contract with Cooley and Beam to supply both new make spirit and matured whiskey for the next several years until whiskey from the new Teeling distillery is ready. In addition to the U.S. distribution deal Teeling signed with Infinium Spirits last month, he has now signed a deal with Monarch Spirits to distribute his whiskeys in Latin America, the Caribbean, and the U.S. travel retail market.
They're underdeveloped markets for Irish whiskey, but they saw the potential for our proposition to fill in with their portfolio. So very excited, undeveloped markets for us, and just excited to get Teeling Whiskey out to a couple of new markets.
And you've got new expressions coming later this year in terms of the main range that won't hit Latin America or the North American markets yet, but they will get to at least Europe and Ireland for the time being, right?
Yeah, we have a very interesting couple of single malts that we're going to be bottling in our, let's say, from our research, they're going to be some of the oldest bottlings of our single malt ever released. We're going to have a 26-year-old that has been given an extra 12 months maturation, a white burgundy cask that gives it a lovely tropical fruit flavor. We're going to be releasing 30-year-old single malts in very small scales, so there'll only be 250 bottles, and there'll be only 500 bottles of the 26-year-old as well. So they will be bottled. The very first batch will be bottled at the end of this month, and then rolled out to a handful of markets after that. But fingers crossed, we can be bringing them to the U.S. fairly soon as well.
And the second batch of your 21-year-old is being bottled too, right?
Yeah, we've sold through the first 5,000. We're releasing the second batch now. And again, this is something a little bit different. It has a hint of peat in the mash bill, brings in extra complexity, but we give it an extra 12 months in Sauter and sweet wine cask as well, who bring in these lovely different full fruit and sweet flavors that complement that smoky peat influence as well.
Back to the U.S. for a second. The last time we talked a couple of weeks ago, right after you got the planning permits for the new distillery, the whiskey that's coming to the U.S., that first shipment was on the boat. You now have more accurate release plans for it, right?
Yeah, it's landing in the U.S. Mid-March and being released the 1st of April. We're releasing to 17 different states all around April. Myself and my brother, we're doing a two-week roadshow, so we're going to hit around 12 markets, 12 states ourselves. So hopefully we bump into a couple of your listeners as we do the rollout. But very excited. The response has been great so far. We feel the taste, you know, the whole story behind it is going to do something good in the Irish whiskey category in the U.S.
As for the distillery in Dublin, the construction contracts are about to go out for bids. Work should begin later this spring. Let's talk about new whiskeys now. Glendronach's Grandeur 31-year-old single malt is sold out. The distillery is replacing it with a new 24-year-old Grandeur. The whiskey was matured in Oloroso sherry casks and bottled at 48.9% ABV. Only 569 bottles will be available. Pricing was not disclosed. The Glenrothes is releasing the second in its Extraordinary Casks series. Single cask releases from the Glenrothes are rare, and just 133 bottles of this cask from 1969 will be available, according to Ronnie Cox of Berry Brothers and Rudd.
This one is part of a parcel of casks that we found from, that originated actually with a wonderful American called Abe Rosenberg, who, as you possibly know, used to work and really is accredited with the development of J&B whiskey in the United States of America, and of course with the Inner Star Industries, I think it was in New York. So a wonderful collector and connoisseur before his time of single malts, and he had amassed quite a collection of whiskies, which in 2002 were between, I think, 27 and 45 years old, and they were then sold to a person who purchased a company near Glasgow, and looking through those casks, we identified a few which we thought, in our fancy of selecting just the very, very best of all the best, would run as the top of the bloodline of Glenrothes.
And this 1969 is, I assume, extremely limited. What can you tell me about this specific cask?
Well, it's a hogshead, which is still extremely fresh in terms of its flavor profile. We've been lucky enough to look through several casks, and obviously we'll only select the ones that we think are still up to it. I think a whiskey of that age is obviously going to be... In normal circumstances, if it had been the first fill, it would have been very woody and therefore wouldn't have been up to the peculiar requirements that we need for a single cast of Glenrothes. But this one is absolutely delightful. I haven't got it in front of me now, so I can't. I'll be talking from memory alone. But all I can tell you is that it's as I say, it's got 133 bottles. It's been bottled in about, well, at 42.9. These are all hand-blown bottles, so each bottle is slightly different in content, annoyingly, because some take slightly more, some take slightly less than the 750 or the 700 millilitres.
Which markets will these be available in?
Well, they will be available in the United States of America and obviously the rest of the world, but we will be doing a 750 for the United States, and we will be doing 700 for the rest of the world. In terms of its taste profile, as I say, it's fresh, it's clean, very uplifting, very fruity, lots of wine gums, sweet marmalade, and a late spicy note. All these will shine through it. The reason, you know, we don't do a lot of single casks, and the reason is that we've always believed that Glenrothes are two casks combined together, will produce something greater than the sum of the parts. And that's what we're looking for. But just occasionally you get single casks which are so wonderfully mature that they tell a fabulous story. And this one has got impeccable heritage and it's quite delicious on the palate. In fact, we tried some just last week. The first tasting we had in Berry, Bubbles and Rudd in the dining room, the director's dining room in the 300-year-old building, surrounded with Moses from industry and to great accolades, the whiskey was consumed with happiness.
The 1969 Extraordinary Cask will sell for £4,000 a bottle. That's just under $6,700 U.S. And finally, there's another tie-in between whiskey and the entertainment world. Back in December, we found out about Great Odin's Raven, the Ron Burgundy Scotch whiskey timed with the release of Anchorman 2. Now, with a third season of the revived Dallas about to hit TV, the show's producers have teamed up with Glazers in Dallas to create the J.R. Ewing Bourbon. It's bottled by South Fork Bottling with whiskeys from undisclosed distilleries and will be available globally by the end of the year. Ironically, the actor who played J.R. Ewing, the late Larry Hagman, had a liver transplant in 1995 after years of alcohol abuse left him with cirrhosis of the liver. Hagman appeared in the revival of Dallas until his death in 2012. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, introducing Glenmorangie Companta, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range. A complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte d'Aron French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. We start off with a lesson in chemistry and possibly philosophy from Merle Giles in Illinois. He posted simply, "According to chemistry, alcohol is a solution." Well, that's true. But a solution to what, Merle? Share your opinions with us at the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. Fred Minnick tweeted this out during the week. "Just finished my Girl Scout cookies, Samoas, thank you, with Michter's Whiskey Basic Bourbon. Worked out just fine." For the politically correct, Samoas were renamed Caramel Delights a few years ago. But fortunately, they did not change the recipe, and it is one of my favorite Girl Scout cookies. While I don't have any Michter's in the house right now, I did test his idea out with other bourbons, and he's right. Now, I'd like to bring some closure to a question asked last November in episode 450. Mark Rosauer wanted to know whether Jim Murray was planning to update the Whiskey Bible app that he had bought a year and a half earlier, or whether he should, and I want to quote his original email now, "sit down, shut up, and be happy with what I've got now." At the time, I said I would check with Jim and get back to you. This week, I finally heard back from one of Jim's assistants. Dean Ayotte emailed me this update. "We do have plans for a completely overhauled and updated version of the app, which will be out hopefully by the spring. We are currently ironing out some of the details with it all." Now, I can't fault Jim and his team for the delays on the app, since we've had our own issues for a while with the current version of the WhiskeyCast mobile app. We are still working on a completely updated version of that app. Of course, ours is free, while the Whiskey Bible app is still selling for $17.99. Sorry, that was a bit snarky. But on that note, Gavin Ryan Thompson said he is looking forward to the WhiskeyCast iPhone app when it's finished. He likes listening to the podcasts through the phone while enjoying a fine dram. Now, while there are some functions of the WhiskeyCast app that aren't working right now, you can still listen to WhiskeyCast episodes each week on the app. The only parts that don't work right now are the calendar of events and the tasting notes, and you can always bookmark those pages on the WhiskeyCast website to get access to them quickly. Finally, I've made a lot of references to the Whiskey Fairies that deliver samples to my home office, along with a lot of press kits. It's interesting to see just how creative some of the whiskey PR firms can get when they're sending out press kits and samples. Last year's winner in my unofficial Whiskey Press Kit of the Year competition went to the guys who sent a bottle of Jim Beam Jacobs Ghost White Whiskey in a wooden coffin. I've posted a photo on our Facebook page of the clubhouse leader in this year's competition. The sample kit for Diageo's 2013 special releases arrived this week in a custom-made wooden box with special slots for the background book and a flash drive. Jan Peter Hoel posted from Norway, "Where can I sign up? Pretty much willing to do whatever it takes." And that was pretty much the standard response, with a few people wondering how so-called mere mortals could get their hands on one. I have no idea how many were made, how I got lucky enough to get one, or how one could get their hands on one. But as for the samples, well, my tasting notes will be up on the website in the very near future. If you have something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com. You can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast. And if you're into Pinterest, I'm pinning ideas for my new man cave / studio / whiskey room on my Pinterest page. You can email me directly as well. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker, on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville has a Four Roses tasting planned for this Friday night. The Newcastle Whiskey Fest is Saturday in Newcastle, England, along with Whiskey Birmingham in Birmingham, England. Whiskey Live Israel, March 5th and 6th in Tel Aviv. The Kensington Wine Market in Calgary, Alberta, will have its Great Macallan vertical tasting on March 5th. And Whiskey Messe Ruhrgebiet will be March 7th through the 9th in Bochum, Germany. Finally, the Whiskey Exchange in London has a Suntory tasting with master blender Shinji Fukuyo on March 8th. Right now, there are 307 different events on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. Just click the search button on the calendar page to find one near you. The calendar is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Jerry McCarthy, stillhouse operator, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
There was a time then we brought in 12 barrels, and I was asked to. I was foreman in the warehousing at the time, and it was to be handled by no one other than myself and the supervisor in question, Dennis McSweeney. and we put it together, made it up. I was told to bend them, strap them, get them onto the back of a lorry. They were being shipped off up to Dublin, and they were special. And I was told it was liquid gold. It was actually Redbreast.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Alwyn Gwilt is a whiskey blogger, freelance writer, and known as The Miss Whiskey online. At last month's Victoria Whiskey Festival, she led a women's only tasting of whiskeys and chocolates for a group of 90. She is originally from British Columbia, but now lives in London, and like a lot of people, fate led her to whiskey.
I thought I hated whiskey. Really, really anti drinking anything to do with whiskey after a couple of bad experiences in my late teenage years. Swore it off. And then in 2008, I was living in London and I was working for an insurance magazine. And my boss asked me if I could go along to an event. So lots of events get held for magazines, you get invited along. And it was at a place called Milroy's of Soho in London. And I knew it was going to be a whiskey event. We were having a big event up in Scotland a few months later. So they had some Scottish Financial Association down, invited some journalists along. And I said, please don't make me go. I really hate whiskey. You can't possibly make me go to this event. I was 22. It wasn't really a spirit that was on my radar. But he said I kind of had to go. Obviously, so you do what the boss tells you. And by the end of the night, I was leaving Milroy's going, I love whiskey. And it wasn't just because I had tried probably six or seven. It was because I genuinely was so astounded by how beautiful they were, how the flavors, the tastes, everything about it was just incredible. And that kind of started the journey.
So what changed it that night? What was about that night made it so special?
I wish I could pin it down to a specific whiskey, because I ask people a lot, what was the whiskey that kind of got you into drinking the spirit? I don't remember. But I remember having this moment where everybody was stood around and someone had won one of the very old bottles of whiskey. I can't even remember. It was being given away. And I tried all these different flavors in the whiskeys, had this beautiful meat and cheese, seen how it all gone together. And I remember standing there thinking, a lot of these whiskeys are older than I am. And I just couldn't believe that all this spirit had been taking so long to get into a bottle for people to drink. I was just mesmerized by this factor. And that really kind of helped to ignite the passion. I just remember that moment really clearly of thinking.
So how do you turn that from discovering it for the first time to making it your career?
A lot of last minute. No, I shouldn't say last. That's a wrong way to phrase it. I became very passionate about whiskey. So I started going and buying a bottle from Milroy's every birthday and Christmas for myself. Other people started buying me bottles. And after about 3 years of doing this, I was in a job where I knew I wasn't going to stay in that job. And people said to me, well, what are you going to do? Because it's a recession and quitting your job is not the most logical thing. I do this frequently. I ran away to London because I thought it would be a good fun. And I thought if I stayed still in Toronto for too long, I'd get bored. So I moved to London and things worked out. So I decided I'd quit my job and write about whiskey, which seems a bit illogical. The plan had been obviously to become a freelance journalist because I was doing lots of journalism stuff. So I thought, well, I'll be a freelance journalist, but I'll try and make my focus whiskey, which is when I had kind of researched the market. And that's when I developed MissWhiskey.com, my website, and it kind of grew from there, really.
And in addition to the freelance writing, you're now doing tastings, you're doing some consulting work. Here in Victoria, you were leading a big event the other night with 90 women tasting whiskey and chocolate. Tell me how that turned out.
It was absolutely by far one of the most exciting events I've ever done. Just to have a room of 90 women, you don't see that very often in the whiskey industry. I mean, I certainly get a fairly high proportion of women coming along to my tastings, but to have 90 women all there talking about some fantastic whiskeys was one of the most memorable experiences, certainly, of my whiskey kind of career since I've been involved in the whiskey world. The energy was palpable. I when people were coming in and, you know, sitting down at their seats, you could feel the buzz, you could feel the energy, and it was just, I don't know, everybody was just excited, and it was amazing to see that excitement all in the room here at the festival.
You're part of this vanguard of young whiskey ambassadors and young whiskey journalists and bloggers who are sort of changing the face of
whiskey as we know it. How do you get past this perception, being young, that whiskey is a drink for old guys like me?
I think it's because of this vanguard. I think because you're seeing so many more people get involved with it, making it cool, making it fun. I think it's about making it fun. I think people are suddenly going, hang on a minute, whiskey doesn't have to be just drunk neat. It doesn't have to be, you know, you can put it in cocktails. I think the cocktail culture has helped to change a lot of perceptions about whiskey. It certainly did with bourbon, and I think that trend is moving into whiskey as well. And I think it can be hard. You get a lot of people going, wait, how old are you? Why do you like whiskey? Why do you drink it? But one of the best bits is changing people's opinions. I absolutely love that. I love a challenge of trying to, you know, change someone's stuck in the mud opinion about a drink, especially because at the end of the day, it's a drink. We should enjoy it. It should be about enjoyment. It doesn't matter about the age or your gender. It's just there to be enjoyed.
Let's get to the gender question now, because as a young woman, you've seen at whiskey festivals what can charitably be described as booth babes, mm-hmm. and women who have no knowledge of whiskey, mm-hmm. pouring it at festivals and being able to share absolutely no knowledge about it with consumers. How do you get past the perception of women in whiskey? We saw the bit with the Doers ad recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you get past those perceptions to establish your own credibility with an older audience, a more male audience, to be honest mm-hmm. with you? How do you get past those perceptions and be treated like an equal?
I think I've been fairly lucky in terms of people coming along to tastings, whether that's me, the ones I'm running or events I happen to be at behind a stand, where I haven't had that too often. When I have had that, it is tricky. It's hard to negotiate your way around that. And I think it's about holding their attention long enough to prove that you know what you're talking about. And once you actually start to communicate the fact that you do understand whiskey, you do drink it, because one of the main questions that I get is, oh, do you actually drink whiskey? And my response is always, well, I wouldn't do this job if I didn't enjoy it, because you can't really talk about whiskey if you don't like it. And at that point, I tend to bring out my business card and I say, look, this is my website. This is what I do. And as soon as they realize that I'm not just there to hand out whiskey and maybe not know anything about it, as soon as I hand that card over, people realize, okay, she does do this more often. And I see that happen a lot. And you see people's reactions to you change. And on the kind of idea that the quote unquote booth babes, you know, I do get frustrated at that. I think that the women who can sometimes be employed in that position stand out more than the men do, because I've frequently asked a lot of men working behind booths at whiskey festivals and they don't know anything at all. It's just that the girls, if they're dressed in teeny tiny shorts, they tend to attract the opinion that they're not going to know anything more than the men are. I don't know if that makes sense. So if you see a man and a woman behind a booth, one's wearing really short shorts and a tight top, and the guy's there in a suit, even if neither of them know anything about whiskey, it's always going to be the female that's seen as really not knowing about whiskey, if that makes sense. And I think companies really, really need to educate the staff they have working behind booths, because it gives everybody a bad reputation when you're not representing your product in a way that shows it off in its best light. If you go up to a stand and they say, oh, I wouldn't drink this whiskey, oh, I don't drink whiskey, well, how does that show the product in the best light? So it harms everybody, not just a gender. It harms the industry.
And lack of education and knowledge cuts across gender lines and age lines too.
Absolutely, entirely. And I always am surprised when I see that. I see that less and less at festivals. And I'm sure I've only been involved in this a shorter period of time than maybe, well, lots of people in this industry. So they will have seen potentially larger changes than I have. But I think that education aspect is so critical to changing people's opinions about whiskey, to what you were saying, changing the idea that whiskey is only for old men, this kind of idea. You have to be educating people that that's not the case. It just isn't. And the only way the industry will develop and grow and help to broaden its horizons is if you have those people out there who are educated, who are able to educate other people in a manner that sticks with them. So hopefully we'll we'll see an eradication of people, male, female, young or old, working behind stands who don't know what they're talking about, because it doesn't help anyone.
How does this industry market to a younger generation and get past that image of it being an old guy's drink? But besides making it fun, how can the whiskey companies of the world reach the 20-somethings out there, the so-called millennial generation?
I think a lot of that really is done through the bar scene. I think the on-trade is a key aspect of that equation, are the whiskey companies being okay with seeing their drinks maybe mixed in a cocktail if it's done well? And, you know, there's a lot of fantastic cocktail bars out there, whether that's in Victoria, where we are right now, or in New York or London, wherever you are globally. And I think that helps, is because you can reach an audience that way, who's maybe a bit younger, but, you know, going out, that kind of thing. Because once you kind of hook them in at that stage, there's a possibility that it will continue. I think whiskey industries are grabbing onto the idea that, you know, you do need to be involved in social media, you need to be doing interesting campaigns, but equally that it can backfire very badly, as we saw, you know, with the Doers campaign, if it's not done well and if it's not done in a respectful way. So have fun, but just make sure that everybody's, you know, that there's going to be a lot of people out there watching, and there's now going to be a lot of people who are going to call you on it when you do something daft.
So what does the future hold for Miss Whiskey?
That is a good question. I am certainly of the opinion that I like to see how life goes. I'm not the best person at saying where, you know, when you go into job interviews and you say, where will you be in 5 years? I always respond with, well, where will you be in 5 years? I don't know. So I want to keep developing it. I want to keep reaching out to people. And I love talking about whiskey. I love educating people about whiskey as much as I can. So whether that's through the website or through whiskey tastings, through video in the future, things like that, then, you know, any kind of way I can reach out to a new audience, talk to people about whiskey, interact, communicate, then that keeps me happy. So hopefully we'll be seeing more development, more articles on the website. Certainly, I revamped it at the end of last year, so now there's an opportunity to have a lot more content on the website. So hopefully just growing that side, and hopefully attending more festivals like this, such as the Victoria Whiskey Festival, because it's been a real eye-opener to see how the Canadian market is and how much people love whiskey over here. So it's all fantastic, really.
You'll find a link to the Miss Whiskey site at whiskeycast.com. And that's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a whiskey from the Pacific Northwest, just a little south of Victoria. We met the guys from Seattle's Westland Distillery last month in episode 460. This weekend, they released their first peated single malt and sent a sample for me to taste. The Westland First Peated Malt is bottled at 46% ABV and is actually vatted from two new make spirits, one heavily peated at 55 parts per million of phenols, and one from a mash of pale malt. The result is a whiskey with a nose that has a gentle but rich smokiness with soft oak, allspice, honey, and caramel. The taste has cinnamon, allspice, and clove balanced well with an underlying peatiness and sweet touches of honey and caramel candy. The finish is long and sweet with honey, brown sugar, a soft hint of cinnamon, and just a bit of smoke to pull it all together. I'm scoring the Westland Peated Malt an 87. Next up, a Creative Whiskey Company exclusive malts bottling of a 1985 Longmorn single cask. This 28-year-old single malt was bottled at 51.6% ABV. The nose is spicy and oaky with black pepper, honey, vanilla, and still a touch of malt. The taste is spicy and peppery with hints of honey, vanilla, and oak underneath the spices, and just a hint of brown sugar. The finish is long and spicy. I'm scoring the 1985 Longmorn single cask from the Creative Whiskey Company an 88. Finally, Old Pulteney's Navigator is bottled at 46% ABV. The nose has notes of green apples, banana chips, coconut, vanilla, dark chocolate, and just a hint of smoke. The taste is thick, rich, and fruity with orange peel, black tea with honey, green apples, hints of dark chocolate, and a touch of clove for balance. The finish is long and spicy with clove and a hint of briny wet sand that comes out as the clove fades. This one is just a bit hot on the palate, but a few drops of water calms it down nicely. I'm scoring the Old Pulteney Navigator an 86. You'll find these and my searchable tasting notes for more than 1,100 other whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, the calendar of events, travel resources, and much more, including a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Twitter or Facebook at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.